Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 104 of Slamfire Radio for April 24th.
The Starfighter episode.
Huh?
Not the CF-104 Starfighter. It's like one of Canada's awesomest, it wasn't Canada's, but we used it. It was in our Air Force. It was a really cool fighter bomber interceptor plane.
See, when you said Starfighter, I thought we were talking like Star Wars or something.
No.
And I was thinking, see, you know what that is, and I don't, therefore you're more of a geek than I am.
Except that it's actually a fighter jet.
And I actually thought of Star Wars when I thought of that, so I guess I am more of a geek than you are.
So backfired, I guess, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Matthew.
And I'm Owen.
And welcome.
Welcome. And Trevor's not here. Oh, yeah.
Trevor's got a really good buy, though. He's really? He's at Promotion Plus working the Rusty Goose Gun Club's booth. So okay. he's talking guns, showing guns, handling guns, and hopefully recruiting people to the club and bringing people on side to gun ownership and whatnot. So yeah, he's doing a good thing tonight. It's unfortunately he can't be here, but if he's going to be anywhere, that's where he should be.
That's right. We keep tabs on him, make sure that he's, you know, not goofing around and doing something dumb while
I mean,
he's on the show.
If yeah, that's the thing, eh? You just never know with that guy. You really got to keep a tight leash on him.
All right. Well, we can jump into what we did with guns this week then. Matthew, what about you?
Well, I did what you did.
Oh, what did yes. I didn't do anything.
Well, you did a little.
Well, sort of.
Sort. We shot the 22s three times, I think. There were three shots fired. We brought Elia, right?
Yes.
Elia and actually Evelyn and I think Trinity came out too, but I think Elia's the only one that shot. She had her little pink, is it a Savage Cub she has?
It's a Savage, that's terrible. I can't remember what it's called now.
It's a little pink bolt action single shot. I thought it was a Savage.
It is a Savage, but it's not a Cub.
Oh.
It's called a Cub. It's a...
Rascal?
Yes, Savage Rascal. Yeah,
there you go. I wonder what I'm thinking of for Cub. Maybe it's Piper Cub I got on the brain. I don't know.
Yeah, planes on the brain, eh?
Plane on the brain. So anyway, yeah, we blew up some balloons and stapled them to a large stump on your back property there and tried to shoot some balloons.
Yeah.
So you put the swinger up there as well for you and I to shoot at whenever we got bored with just watching the girls shoot, but it turned out that didn't happen. Anyway, I fired one shot at the swinger, and because of where we put it, the splatter actually popped one of the balloons. Oops. And then one of the balloons got away, and it was windy, so it was really hauling across the lawn, so I took a running shot on it and nailed that, but that's all I ever fired, and then I think Elia shot once, didn't she?
Yeah, she got one shot in. She was having, I think the battery has run down in the red dot that I have mounted on it, and it was just because
it was dim.
The way the light was, she was really struggling to find that dot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's used to shooting off a bench.
And it was very wet and sort of muddy, so we didn't want to lay down in the grass and go prone.
Yeah.
So she was trying to shoot off, she started standing, right?
Yes.
And then we went to kneeling, and neither really kind of worked out. She just needs to figure out what her stance is supposed to be. That's all. Just
well, being a right-handed shooter who's left eye dominant doesn't help either.
No, it doesn't. You need to. I think you need to put a on her shooting glasses. Put a piece of tape on the left side.
Yes.
So that she can't see out of that eye anyway.
Yeah. There's a few things that need to happen there. Something like that, and build up the cheek rest so that her right eye is more naturally in line with that red dot.
Yeah, because the red dot's off the top of the barrel there a little bit. I mean, that's supposed to be a peep sight gun, not a scoped gun. So the red dot is higher than it should be.
Yeah, that's right. So and then it was supper time. So
and then we got off three shots and we went in and ate. What did we have for supper that night? Was that?
I have no idea.
That wasn't pork loin. No, it was. That was last time I was there.
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I don't even remember what I had for lunch, so it's... Oh, wait, I didn't have
it. Oh, it was like roast chicken and like mashed potatoes with cheese and bacon bits. That's what it was that night.
Pork loin.
We had that with a pork loin? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, then it was something else. I don't remember what it was, but it was awesome.
Anyway.
Here we are, talking about food.
And Julia Child is going to join us shortly. Oh, wait, no, she's not. Okay, upcoming events. I guess we should move on to that.
I guess so. We didn't really do anything else with guns, so...
No, I'm afraid we really... I worked out. I worked my guns a little bit, but...
You worked out. Okay. I almost bought some ammo today, but I couldn't find the guy with the key, so I left. It was some CCI 22 Quiet.
Okay.
So it's 40 grain going like 800 feet per second or something, so it's really, really quiet, but more powerful than the CB because those are like 29 grain, so... Mm. I wanted it. I'm going to go back and try to get it before somebody else gets it, but I couldn't find the guy with the key, so I left.
The 22 seems to be getting more and more scarce.
It is, unless somebody came to my house and then they'd find lots of it.
Yeah, everyone I talk to says they can't find it, yeah. Even in Canada. I mean, for a while, nobody in the States could find it, but there was lots of it in Canada.
But now it's running out here, too.
Now it seems to be running out here, too. So. Yeah,
which is depressing. Time to move on to single shot. Bolt action, so I don't waste it.
Yep. All right, upcoming events. We have the 5th Annual Charity Shoot on June 27th. All proceeds are going towards the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. And the Para Course with Tommy Nelson, that's on July 3rd. And it's currently full, isn't it?
I think so.
Yep, but there's an IDPA mini match the following day. So if you're in the area and like to come for that, that would be great.
It would be awesome. Just bring a gun, a 9mm or bigger, and a holster that covers your trigger guard. That's all you need.
Yep, and maybe a magazine holder or something.
Or yeah, that probably
even
help.
That you can run it from your pockets, I think.
Sure, why not?
Right.
It's not an official match anyway, so.
That's right.
We'll accommodate whatever you got there just to get people involved and get them shooting and having some fun.
Hmm. SummerSlam is August 8th and 9th. That's an IPSC match, the largest in the province, maybe in the Maritimes, maybe in Canada. I don't
maybe.
Know. Sure, but it is big.
Yep.
People come in from all over the country. 2015 registration is now open, and you go to the Rest of Goosh Gun Club website to find all the information for that. The NFA AGM is on May 23rd, 24th in Quebec City. The CSSA AGM is on May 30th in Ottawa. And One-Shot Tactical Ontario IDPA Provincial Championship. Tier 2 will be held on August 15th, 2015 at 9 o'clock in the morning. And you go to 2015opc.com for more information on that. Carbine Vitals 2 Clinic has 3 spots open currently. There is a second instructor coming with Daniel. That's why we have those extra spots that we didn't think we were going to have. And that's, I know the course last year was a lot of fun and very informative. So I encourage you, if you would like to get better with your rifle, plan on coming out to that. And I believe the cost is $400, correct?
$400 US. And that is a 2-day course. So it's not $400 for an afternoon of shooting with Daniel. It's a 2-day comprehensive rifle, and there will be some pistol shooting as well. So yep. If you want to work on your sidearm skills as well, there will be some of that. This is a comprehensive, in-depth course. You are definitely getting what you pay for here.
Absolutely.
So what people have been doing is just sending me an EMT, and so you can just send that to slamfireradio@gmail.com, $400 US, and I'm going to be sending that to Daniel shortly. Those of you, I mean, if there's somebody who gets in after I've sent the money, it's not a problem. That's not a deadline at all. All we'll ask you to do then is just send the money directly to Daniel. Mm-hmm. Those listeners who have sent in a deposit, it's time to send in the rest. So whatever you have sent in, please do the math. Send me the equivalent, what you owe in U.S. funds, to bring it up to $400 US, and I will be sending that off to Daniel quite shortly, so if you could get on that sort of ASAP, that would be fantastic.
Great. And are we going to mention this last one now?
Might as well, yeah.
Sure. And we've got an initiative that we're going to be interviewing a couple of the people that are sort of in charge, I guess, of this initiative. And it's called Keep Calm and Make It Rain Initiative. And so, yeah, just stay tuned, I guess, for that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the shooting center that they're hoping to set up in Ontario.
Yippers. One other thing.
Yes.
T-shirts. Yes. We are doing another T-shirt run. The idea behind this run is for anybody who is coming to the charity shoot, you can save shipping costs. So if you're coming and you want a T-shirt, send me an email. I need your size, color, and
color of the T-shirt.
Color of the T-shirt. Color. Yes, I don't care what color you are. Purple. You're Barney. All right. So, colors, I believe, are black, dark blue, dark green. That dark green might be an olive green, too. It depends on what the supplier can get. Purple and tan. I do believe tan is an option. So if you want tan, let me know. We're going to be getting those T-shirts. Those of you who aren't coming to the shoot, no worries. We will mail it out to you. I think shipping charges will be in the realm of like $5, something like that for in Canada, probably a little bit more for the US. And the T-shirts themselves, I believe, will be $25 Canadian. So get your order in. And then once the order's been, once I have a list of all the orders, I'll send everybody else an email, you know, send me an EMT, and then I'll get them ordered and we'll get that on its way.
And there's no real deadline set for this yet, but it's going to be, you know, what, a month or so, just so that we can have everything in time for the...
Exactly. Yeah, I want everything done so that I have the T-shirts in hand before the charity shoot. So those of you who aren't coming, you will have your shirts shortly after the charity shoot happens, or maybe shortly before. But that's sort of the time frame we're looking at there. Get your orders in if you want one. It's the same design as last time. If you don't know what those look like, you can go on our Facebook page and just go to last year's charity shoot pictures. Pretty much everybody's wearing one. That's what it looks like.
All right. So that's that.
That's that. It's time
that's
for that. The news.
That's the news. Police recover rifle stolen from off-duty officer's vehicle. Now I've got to get closer to the screen because you made all this stuff smaller print.
Get your bifocals out there.
Calgary police said they were relieved but not proud after they recovered a patrol rifle that was stolen from an off-duty officer's vehicle nearly 2 weeks ago. And I believe we read that article on the show or talked about it on the show. The officer, identified by sources as Constable Stephen Baker, left the police-issued firearm in his personal vehicle on the evening of April 4th when he stopped into Shank Sports Bar on Crowfoot Terrace Northwest. When he returned, he realized someone had broken into the Subaru and fled with a hardcover case containing the Colt C8 rifle, which he was taking home to clean, and two magazines containing 28 rounds each.
Okay, so it's a C8, which mm-hmm. is the Canadian AR-15, the Canadian military. Well, so it can't be a C8 because that's a select fire.
No,
is it not?
No, it is a C. The C7 is...
Oh, C7.
Yeah,
no.
The C8 is the one they made for the RCMP.
Oh, I see.
This is Calgary Police, actually. This is not...
Yeah, not there.
It's not RCMP. Well, it might be. I don't know.
So slightly confused. However, this is an AR-15 type rifle.
Yes, but they called it a semi-automatic.
But they called it a patrol rifle. Why do they call mine an assault rifle? I got the same gun.
Exactly.
Huh.
Anyway, the case apparently was locked but improperly tethered to the vehicle, police said.
We're supposed to tether our cases to our vehicles?
I guess so that they don't
that,
know.
That way if they fall out, you can just drag it along behind you. You don't have to tether our cases to... Maybe that's a police policy.
It's important to have, you know, your guns on a leash.
Otherwise, so how are you gonna keep them from going crazy?
Investigators said they recovered the weapon and magazines after executing a search warrant in a Northeast home Wednesday, but the case is still missing. No charges have been laid. We're not proud. We're relieved because we get what we lost more than the rifle when it was taken. Oh, because we get that we lost more than the rifle when it was taken, Sergeant Jason Walker with the Police Services Guns and Gangs Unit told reporters Thursday. There was trust and confidence issues there. And a big part of this was getting both the rifle back and the looking to work to restore that kind of trust and confidence because we need that. The Calgary Police Service reported a separate investigation into the officer's handling and storage of the firearm, including his decision to remove it from the police headquarters, is ongoing. Spokesman Kevin Brookwell said a provincial police watchdog will review the investigation. Next, Crown Council in Edmonton, not in Calgary, to maintain independence, look at the case to determine if charges should be laid against the officer. Baker, a three-year member of the police force, remains suspended with pay. Walker said police have identified persons of interest in the firearm theft, but no suspects. The home where they seized the rifle and magazine was not previously known to the police. That strikes me as funny.
Yeah.
They found it in the house, but those people aren't a suspect?
Interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. There's no reason to believe the rifle was used in the commission of an offense, but an ongoing forensic examination of the weapon will reveal whether it was discharged, among other possible clues, Walker said. Investigators are still searching for the case, which contained the firearm and magazines, which may reveal more clues into unraveling this mystery. Da-da-da-da. Officers are also looking for the driver of a vehicle, which was in a parking lot next to Shanks during the night that the gun was stolen. The witness was temporarily blocked by a suspect vehicle, believing to be occupied by those responsible for the theft. Walker said officers have poured countless hours into recovering the rifle with a tremendous sense of urgency. From the chief on down, no one's been sleeping well for the last 12 days, and I can assure you of that, Walker said. This makes no sense to me. This is Scotty in the engine room. Captain, the ship's going to blow, he said, referring to the chief engineer in the Star Trek series. What a weird way to end an article. I have no idea what that has to do with any of this, but, I think it's good that, I don't know, There's plenty of fail in this, but there is some good things.
Well, there's a couple of,
the fact that they would make the connection, you know, that there was trust and confidence issues, though I would say there's less trust and confidence issues because this could have happened to anyone, as much as there is equality issues with a regular Joe Blow has a gun stolen out of his truck and then gets, you know, charged with
unsafe storage or something,
like that.
And that may still happen with this officer. They said there's an investigation ongoing.
Yes.
So, here's the thing. The case, I think it said the case was locked and in his truck or in his, mm-hmm. in his car, in his Subaru. So we don't know what kind of Subaru, if it was like one of the wagons or the Forester, you can't put it in the trunk because there is no trunk. They're station wagons. So it's conjecture completely. So if it was one of those two Subarus, he didn't even have the gun improperly stored because it was in a locked case in a locked car. The only thing he could have done better was it being locked in the trunk if it had a trunk. That's the only thing. So really, I don't really see this, unless he took the rifle without permission and, you know, wasn't supposed to have it with him. I don't really see him doing anything wrong, except that maybe he should have just gone straight home and not stopped at the bar first. I mean, I know I'm not allowed to stop at a bar whenever I take my AR-15 to the range. I have to go straight to the range and then straight home again. But, I mean, they are police. They are outside of the Firearms Act, right? They're sort of exempt from it, whatever.
Well, yeah, there seems to be a lot of conjecture and gray area on, you know, on duty, off duty.
Right, yeah.
You know, that all that kind of stuff. And I'm not clear on those rules. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I do know, in talking to a friend of mine who is a border guard, and with his service weapon, he's allowed to take it to the range and use it for practicing. But he is not allowed to take it home. He has to leave it there. So when he goes off duty, he has to leave his firearm there. And if he wants to take his firearm to the range, he has to go to get his firearm from, you know, work and then go to the range.
Right. Like sign it out, go to the range and then bring it back before he goes home.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Well, it says that he was taking it home to clean it.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they have different rules than the border
absolutely.
Guards and stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's got to be some sort of policy there governing this. And as long as he was within policy, I don't see why he should be in any sort of trouble unless, like I said, he wasn't supposed to stop when he did. Because that does put a firearm sort of in the public in sort of an unsecured manner, sort of. I mean,
not really. I mean, he...
Only because he went against policy, though, not because it's actually more dangerous. Because
if he broke, what we know of the story, if he broke a rule that was a policy of the police force, you know, then he should, you know, whatever the police force says, you know, for breaking that policy, whatever the punishment or whatever they should do, you know, he gets fired or he gets a reprimand or, you know, whatever. Then if he broke policy, then that's justice.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he should be charged with if he didn't break any kind of policy and he's allowed to take this firearm home, if he's always on duty,
he shouldn't be in trouble for anything. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. The bad guy stole the gun. The bad guy did something wrong, not the cop.
As per Canadian transport laws, he was transporting it, you know.
Yep. Legally
as far, you know, it wasn't like it was sitting on the front seat out of the case and
Yeah, it wasn't loaded.
No, he had mags in his pocket. You know, like
The case was locked. The case was in his locked car, and the ammo was locked in the case with it. Is what it sounds like. That's a perfectly legal way to transport firearms.
Exactly.
You know, the only thing that we could sort of argue is that it's an AR, and so that's a restricted firearm. But like
again,
I said, the police are sort of outside of that. They're not really, but they sort of are. They're exempt. So
yeah, I guess there's some, you know, because they have, you can have a full capacity magazine.
Yeah.
You know, a normal capacity magazine.
Yeah, and they don't need ATTs to take their guns around and stuff. So, you know. So I don't, you know, I think that the police force is handling this nicely. They suspended him immediately pending an investigation. The investigation is being handled by a separate entity. You know, there and the police force is looking to restore that trust and confidence. So it looks like they're doing this right. I just hope that the officer did everything right beforehand and doesn't actually get into too much trouble for this, because I still think it's the guy, the thief who stole the gun that did everything wrong.
Oh, yeah. I'm really amazed that there's not been charges or some kind of...
I hope they find him.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. So, anyway.
All right. So...
I guess that moves us on to the... Oh, actually, no. Sorry, go ahead.
Me? No. Please,
I was going to
ask you.
Okay, well, it's time for a main topic is what I was going to say, but that's your job to say that.
I was going
to
say it's time for the main topic. What a coincidence that I was going to say that, too.
It's like we're reading off the same sheet of paper. It's like that. We're not. It's an online document, so there's no paper involved at all. We like trees.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
There you go.
And now on to our main topic for this week. We've got an interview with a couple of gentlemen out of Ontario. I'm going to get you gentlemen to introduce yourself, and then why don't you talk a little bit about what you're endeavoring to do with your project.
Well, my name is Kent Nicholson, and I'm the president of we're heading up the project, and with me also is...
Daniel Volofsky, and I'm also watching this project very closely.
So what is this project that you guys are working on?
Well, the project itself is actually to bring a new major shooting facility to the Greater Toronto Area.
But wait, didn't they ban all shooting facilities in Toronto?
Only in Toronto. So we looked at that, and it's time to go right on the other side of Toronto.
So is this going to be on the Oshawa side or the Burlington side?
Northern side. Central, but north.
The northern side. Well, I was wrong completely then, wasn't I?
You got to bracket it, though.
I did. I was close. I had my windage right. I just needed to work on my elevation.
It'd be hard to put it on the southern side.
Yes. They would probably give you all kinds of land in the southern side. Yes, knock yourself out. Build a range out there on the lake. That'll be fine. People who don't live in Ontario or Canada might not get that reference, but it's built on a lake, folks, and the lake is to the south. There we go. I hate explaining jokes. Sorry, carry on.
Well, we get to say don't be wet, you know?
Although a floating range, that would be something.
That would be kind of cool. You could just put buoys out and then have your targets. It could be moving targets too, depending on how windy it is.
That was the one good thing about the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. The whole movie, that was the one good thing. Then the Winchesters.
I fell asleep.
So
we haven't wandered off here at all, have we? Let's bring this back to this Make It Rain project.
Right, so basically what happens is, and Kent will definitely elaborate on this, is that inside Toronto, what happens is you have a concept of a gun range and a gun club. And really, there's, because of the bylaws and all the different rules in Toronto, there's very few ranges inside the city, and there's lots and lots of clubs affiliated with ranges. So what happens is you have one club who maybe has range time for one night of 1 week in a month. I'm not trying to exaggerate. It's the wait lists are very long, and there's a lot of capacity to be served inside Toronto, both for, you know, potential shooters and current shooters. So we want to address the, you know, we know the demand is there. We want to sort of address the demand and give capacity. We're not here to take anyone's business away. We're not going to eat anyone's lunch. We're going to give capacity because we see there are so many people who want to become shooters and who want to be able to shoot, but they say, you know what, the distance to go 2-3 hours out of Toronto is ridiculous. It's not worth my time. We're looking to fix that, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're
so
going just outside the limits.
Did you just say that a club. So there's many clubs, and they all sort of share the same range that where you shoot. And did you say that there would be like in a month there'd be one night for a particular club to go and shoot?
I've seen when the last time I actually did my homework on this one, I've seen that you know, ranges who get one night, clubs who get one night a week at a range, and then you can also have ranges where they have different disciplinary nights, so that can, as soon as they have a competition or something, that can also need to be accommodated into the schedule.
Wow. And I couldn't imagine, okay, yeah. It's Wednesday, I get to go shoot, but if it's Thursday, I'm not allowed. Like, I just, that is crazy. I did not know it was that bad in Toronto.
Well, you think about it. I mean, you've got one city that is a tenth of the population of Canada, almost.
There are 85,000 PAL holders in the GTA, and there's only a couple of ranges. You know, it is bad enough that, you know, as like Daniel mentioned, people are driving hours and hours outside of the city. You know, we're not even talking about the lack of crown land. Just go to the few ranges in the area. You know, most of the ranges are not accepting members, or there's waiting lists, or there's waiting lists for waiting lists.
Wow.
And, you know, in some of the ranges, it is so bad. And of course, the Greater Toronto area is made up of a lot of smaller municipalities that are, you know, affiliated with Toronto. That, you know, you have to literally live in one of these sub municipalities to go to the, you know, to join the range there. You know, so if you're in if you're in, you know, Scarborough, for example, and you're trying to join out a range out in, for example, maybe out in Oshawa, you actually have to literally live in Oshawa to go to that Oshawa range.
Well, I suppose, I mean, if they have that much demand, they can be as picky and choosy as they want to who's their members. So,
you guys first.
No, it is a large part of it. You know, a lot of the ranges they're relatively small in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like most ranges in the area, most ranges, they were built long, long ago before the Firearms Act came into place. You know, so there's, you know, you add the extra regulations. Ontario's, and Southern Ontario is very, very heavily regulated. So, you know, to put something like this in, you know, it's, from a regulatory standpoint, it's very, very difficult. But it's also the land parcels are very, very small. And you run into problems of, you know, either from an environmental aspect or, you know, when you're talking about safety zones that you run into, you know, if you're talking about like a 5 kilometer stretch with nobody there, that doesn't happen in Southern Ontario.
No.
You know, you're going to have a road, you're going to have somebody's house, you're going to have, yep. You know.
And, you know, the other thing is that these ranges, the existing ranges are really doing the best they can to accommodate. And we're here to give additional capacity, really. Toronto became the fourth largest city in North America. We bumped out one of the American cities to get that title.
Take that, America.
I think it was Chicago we knocked out.
Yeah.
But, wow.
I could knock out Chicago.
It's really ridiculous that, Toronto culture being what it is, you know, people maybe aren't familiar with the existing facilities or whatnot, but the way to bring something into mainstream isn't how do we get the media to talk about it. The way to bring something into mainstream is say, we have an existing structure, a physical place that's right in your face. And yes, it's properly set up and everything. And if you want to come, if you want to become a new shooter, if you are a shooter and you really don't think that there are any facilities that are easy enough to join or whatever in terms of wait times or in terms of distance, we're looking to create that. And it's putting our money where our mouth is, and it's building something real and tangible.
So this is, I mean, you're talking about a lot of little ranges that are, you know, several hours away. You're not talking here about creating another little range with, you know, 100-yard berm and a 200-yard berm, and it has, you know, 100 members. You're talking about something pretty big. How big is this? I know it's a big project to do something like this anywhere, get a range off the ground, and especially in a fairly populated area like Southern Ontario. But how big physically are we looking at here?
Well, the actual set size that we're looking at for the end of the project, you know, there's some political aspects about that, so we can't, you know, define it at that point. But, you know, we've broken up into certain phases. But to give an indication of what we're going for is, you know, just to the south of where this range will be, it's called Canada's Wonderland. And we're doing the equivalent. So we're even going to start off with a 600-meter range in our first phase.
Wow.
And, you know, looking at the scope of what we're going for, we're literally going for, there's no other way to really term it. We're going for like a mega range. We're going for the Canada's Wonderland of ranges.
That's going to be crazy. I couldn't imagine.
Do you have like a set number of members you're kind of thinking? I mean, if everybody's full all around, are you going to be able to go big enough to accommodate potentially the thousands of people that maybe, you know?
Well, especially when part of what we want to do is we want to make something so awesome and covering all the shooting disciplines so close to Toronto. We want to grow the gun, the PAL licenses, the people that are involved in the shooting sports. So in the first phase, we will be looking at being able to accommodate a few thousand people. But the actual, our end phase, we're looking to be able to accommodate at least 20,000 memberships.
Wow,
that's good.
Eventually, we'll hit the cap, but yeah. We're certainly planning on into the tens of thousands.
So just out of curiosity, if you're in the tens of thousands of memberships, how accessible will the range be on a daily basis for your everyday average Joe who wants to go to the range and he's a member there, he just wants to go and shoot?
It'd be very accessible. From a membership standpoint, again, we're trying to actually grow the numbers as well. And so, because Toronto is such an important, from a national perspective, I know a lot of people outside of Toronto, everyone grades on it's Toronto. But the fact remains is, we're talking about other than Montreal, where does the anti-gun message come from? Where are the people that are unfamiliar with the shooting sports? Where are they located? And of course, you're looking at places like Toronto. So we want to make sure that we can, have a facility where everybody, we can really increase the exposure that, this is actually legitimate. The days of hiding, the shooting sports are over. And that, so we're looking for a facility where, each shooting discipline is going to have its own, sub ranges on the complex. For example, even like cowboy action, it's going to have its dedicated range. As far as overall accessibility from a financial standpoint, we're talking, around exactly what's currently be charged in the Greater Toronto area currently. We want it accessible basically for, the average Joe. Even students will give them a student break, the veteran, a veteran discount.
And pro gun podcasters, right? We get a break,
and
right?
Pro gun podcasters.
Just saying.
But we're not going for, charge what the market can bear because that doesn't align with our secondary objective of right. really trying to, restore what we had, right?
Yeah.
I remember ARs were sold in Canadian Tire, I come from, most of my family are out west, out in Alberta and British Columbia, and I was educated in Nova Scotia. I'm old enough to remember the Firearms Act come in, young enough at the time to be stupid and not get my prohibited license. But it's restoring what our culture, what we had, right? Mm-hmm. And we were told, through the media and that, you're weird if you shoot skeet. Right. You're weird if you're into F class. And that's not the case. Right. There's a couple million firearms license holders in Canada. And it was just part of our culture in the past. And we're just bringing it back to the forefront.
And speaking of F class, I think one of the big selling points of just phase one, because we're going to roll this out responsibly and incrementally. And phase one is going to have the 600 meter range. I have to remember it's not yards, it's meters. And good luck finding that in Southern Ontario right now. You're not going to find a lot of 600 meter ranges. I'm not sure how many, in fact, you will find. But that's the thing. When I say we're creating capacity here, we're creating the capacity for someone who wants to shoot at a range, shoot distance shooting, and they don't have to, beg, borrow, and steal the time schedule of a Canadian Forces base and say, maybe one day this month we can arrange something. I think it's fantastic that people shoot on CFBs.
But they're subject to CFB requirements, right? Even the police forces. I was actually talking with a gentleman who's involved with some of the training aspect for the local police services, and of course they shoot on the Canadian Forces bases, and they get bumped all the time because it's subject to requirements of the military.
The other thing is Crown Land, right? I mean, Crown Land is fantastic. You can get some great distances shooting on Crown Land. But, we've seen in Ontario, Crown Land where some of the COs, the conservation officers, will come around and they'll say, well, yeah, we're not allowing target shooting there. You might allow hunting or whatever. And then do you really want to roll the dice? We're all law-abiding and, you know, we want to color within the lines. We want to create the capacity that we have a viable shooting range with all the features that people want. And, I mean, people will ask, you know, what's the cost of this going to be? And, you know, respectfully, I say take a look at, you know, one of the greatest names, the CMP Talladega Marksmanship Park. That's in Alabama. It's a 2015 initiative in the States. And you can take a look at what they're building, their total range, and we call that phase one. They're building it in a rural area. We're building it right outside a major North American urban center. What we're seeing is that, you know, it'll cost money to build this. We believe it's going to have such a tremendous impact on the Canadian shooting community, not just the Ontario shooting community. And when we talk about affordability, the distance to travel to the proposed range site is going to save you so much in gas from having to drive, you know, who knows out where. And I'm not saying that, you know, we're going to replace any club. It's going to be additional capacity. Anyone who wants to come and shoot, anyone who says, you know, it's super crowded on any given day at a range or something, and they say, is there an additional option? We're going to be that additional option. So we have people who have put their personal money into it. They really believe in this idea and this initiative, and they put their money where their mouth is, and we're really exceptionally happy with that. So we envision having not-for-profit gun clubs associated with the range, and we really, really want to make this an accessible thing, but also something really tremendous and something that hasn't been attempted in Canada before. But we're going to roll it out. We're going to be financially viable, and we really want to make this thing happen. So that's going to just go to the plug about crowdfunding.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to ask that. So you guys are doing some crowdfunding. Tell us a bit about that, why you're doing it, and where people can go and help out.
Well, the crowdfunding campaign that we've launched is really just to assist. We have, you know, obviously we have some mortgage financing involved.
I can imagine that this project is going to cost a lot of money.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, you don't do anything in Toronto without a lot of money. So I understand where you're going with this. So yeah, carry on. How can people help here, and where can they go?
Well, for our phase one, once we actually you know, we break ground on the phase one, we're actually pretty much fully funded at this point, which is
that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of a different situation to be in. We, you know, this mega project, and we're going, wow, you know, we have all this, you know, essentially construction financing. Our difficulty phase is actually at the very, very beginning with our very first mortgage, and you know, we're trying to close on the first piece of property to do this. And the crowdfunding attempt is to shore up the mortgage lender's support for this, because our budgets are a little bit thin until our construction financing gets unlocked. It's really interesting. You know, we've just been running it very shortly, and we'll be running it until the end of next month. But looking at some of the support, of, you know, where some of these donations have come in, you know, there's a lot. You know, there are a number that are coming in from Alberta and British Columbia. You know, so it's nice to see the support coming up from, you know, other parts of Canada. And certainly, I find it a little bit interesting, of course, you know, myself, I moved around so much. But of course, with Toronto, it's one of these funny things is lots of people live in Toronto. Not a lot of people actually stay in Toronto. You know, so they do branch out. So it is one of the interesting things, you know, when you're talking about something, getting people into the shooting sports. They can live in Toronto for a few years. And of course, where do they go after that?
They go out west.
Well, they go west. Or they, you know, some may go back east. You know?
I don't know why, but
sorry, guys. Going up the road. You know? Sorry, but you know what? And one of the other things is that we've seen that just the existence of this crowdfunding initiative, it's brought in people who say, well, you know what? Maybe what if we want to make a more substantial contribution? So there's a lot of awareness in here, and awareness is great. But just to give you super simple math on the and that's more just to keep things, you know, light. We're the crowdfunding initiative is for less than 3% of the market value of the land. It's not we're not asking, you know, buy our mortgage or whatever or anything. We're asking help us become viable. The more money we do raise, if somebody does want to offer us a chunk of investment, we can accelerate our timetable and build a lot faster. If someone does want to say, you know what, they'll take off the funding pressure from us in dealing with a traditional bank. And right now, you know, whatever the interest rates are when you're trying to build a firing range, it involves some unconventional financing. Mm-hmm. But if somebody wants to come in and help us out with, you know, either securing a mortgage position or anything like that, we can just move so much faster on the timetable. Everything gets accelerated. So
right.
we have a bare minimum we want to cover. And then, you know, anything that goes above that, we've already committed to contributing funds back out into the shooting community. And we want to get this thing done.
Cool. Yeah. Now, I know on Kickstarter, whenever, I mean, that's a crowdfunding website as well. Whenever you donate towards a certain project, oftentimes there's something that you'll get back in return. Is there any sort of similar setup here? Is there going to be maybe a discount on memberships, or is it so far in the future that you really can't offer anything like that right now?
Well, at this time, we can't.
Right.
We've been running a thread on Canadian Gun Nuts where people can go for more information about the shooting range, and we'd have mm-hmm. sort of a running discussion going on. You know, obviously we can't release all the information publicly at this time. And Canadian Gun Nuts has been quite gracious in accommodating this. But part of our agreement with Canadian Gun Nuts is we're actually prohibited from offering,
advanced
things
membership.
Like
talk,
advanced membership
okay, gotcha.
Or discounts and things
yep.
like that.
So that's fine. Yeah,
it's pretty good. So, you know, we've been accommodating to their terms and conditions. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I just want to throw one quick thing into perspective. And
yeah,
really
go ahead.
Sorry. You know, you take a look, anyone who's not from Canada and is listening to this is going to see how many times we apologize and whatever. And if you're not from Canada,
yeah, so we're sorry.
You want to contribute, yeah. But if you want to contribute, you know what? It's going to be something really big for the shooting community and for people's ability to, you know, responsible firearms owners. It's going to make a positive cultural impact, definitely.
Right.
But the other thing is that with a contribution, what we're taking a look at is, you know, if 5,000 people throw a 20 spot at us, we're done. Done and
right.
done. And that when you think about it, the cost of ammunition, I'm not going to tell you how much I usually pay for 5.56, but it's the cost of what, two boxes of Winchester White Box for 223?
Right.
So, you know what? We appreciate all the funds. The thing is that we're saying, you know what, this is a commitment that you're going to have somewhere to go shoot your 223 in the future,
yep.
An accommodating range facility. So, I mean, in terms of that kind of investment, we're really saying it's going to be something that's going to be fantastic, but it is going to help the shooting community as a whole.
Right.
Well, that's the thing that people have to remember, and those of us in Canada kind of recognize this, and those of our listeners, and we have a good bunch of them that aren't in Canada, you have to remember the population difference between a place like United States and Canada is pretty significant. And the battle for gun rights is very much something that has to be like we've talked about before on the show. We don't have to convince the anti-gun people. We have to convince the fence sitters. And most often, we don't even have to really make them pro-gun. We just have to prove that we are not a danger to the public and that we're law-abiding citizens just like everyone else. And you can do that by having positive media. And Toronto and Southern Ontario, being such a huge part of the population of Canada, really so much public opinion and media really kind of drives the agenda all across Canada, like it or not. And so to do something like this right outside of Toronto and have it as big as it is going to be and have it done as well as I'm sure it's going to be, you know, that's yeah. going to have ripple effects across the entire country. Like this isn't something that, okay, I live, you know, I will never shoot at this range, most likely. The chances
we're
of that are.
We're going to fly you in. I mean, come on.
There we go. See, but you know, like realistically, this isn't something I'm going to be going to every week or every month or whatever. But I could see someone from far away going, you know, I'm passionate about gun rights in Canada and I want to do my little bit and I can give these guys $20 just for the positive media coverage that is like, that, you know, potentially could come out of this. And.
Oh, definitely.
That's worth a lot right there.
And part of that, of course, is, you know, when you're talking about legitimate activities, is being visible doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, for obviously the people that are not from Canada that might be listening, you know, the epicenter of our anti-gun movement is actually in Toronto. You know, when you're talking the Coalition for Gun Control, with Wendy Sukiri being there, you know, the CBC headquarters being in Toronto. And that's where our lowest per capita firearms is. So, there are 85,000 PAL holders, but they're drowned out by the overall population. If we add, you know, more PAL licenses in Truro, Nova Scotia, it doesn't mean, sorry guys in Truro, but it doesn't have a big effect because they're far
removed. It doesn't have as big an effect.
It's as big an effect, right?
Right.
But you do it right on the doorstep of the Coalition for Gun Control, that's a bit different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
And the other thing is, and this is going to be just the quickest libertarian rant you'll ever hear. But really the thing is, we don't like people silencing discussion. Have a discussion. And in this case, the discussion is going to be, do you like shooting? Well, I don't know. I don't have a facility I can readily go to. Well, guess what? Now you do. And now we can have the discussion. Well, oh, this is what shooting actually involves. Oh, this is what a magazine capacity limit actually involves. You know, stubbing your thumbs on the feed lips more often and whatnot. Is the sixth round any more evil than the fifth round? But people will get exposure and they'll be able to form their own opinions. So that's the quickest rant there. And it's going to be, we're giving people a forum to experience it. It's going to be there. It's not going to be driven underground. And, it's going to be right outside the fourth largest city in North America. And you better believe this is going to change the conversation. It's going to be right out there.
So what sort of timeline are we looking at here? When can I come shooting?
Depends how much money we get.
Right.
Yeah.
But I understood. Now, what sort of ballpark are we looking at here?
For the completion of the first phase, we're planned for 4, but we're hoping for 3 years.
Okay. So 3 years. So it's a little ways off still, but, I mean, that's not unreasonable, and that's sort of the pace things move in Toronto anyway, so.
Well, yeah, it's our wonderful red tape and regulation that we have to work our way through.
Yep.
You know, it is ongoing with the pre-engineering, the reports, environmental studies, that was actually started last summer.
Oh, okay.
Cool. we're actually well into that. And it'll be picking up pace very, very shortly. It'll probably hit mainstream media probably this summer.
That'd be nice. So let's talk more about the range itself then. Indoor, is there going to be indoor portions of this range, or is it all going to be outdoor shooting?
We're doing both.
So we've got phase one and phase two.
Okay.
And then maybe phase 3 and phase 4.
Right.
So let's talk
about the thing and as it's planned on being completed. Like let's talk about this mega range and what it's going to look like when it's all done in say a 10 years time or whatever.
That's a good time frame there, because that's the planned projection to do the full mega
range. Well, I don't want to say that I hacked into your computer and looked it up myself, but
of all the things to look at on his computer. Okay.
Well, like we mentioned, we're going to have, a 600 meter, range.
Right.
That actually
that's
isn't
up front that, phase 1.
And that'll be an outdoor range, right?
An outdoor range.
Yeah, okay.
We're starting the first few phases will be outdoor.
Okay.
Cuz that is actually the harder part to do in Southern Ontario. Because you just require more land and whatnot.
Yep.
But the 600 meter range isn't actually going to be our longest range. We'll actually have a full 1000 meter range.
Nice. That'll be awesome. A lot of guys are going to really be looking forward to that part.
We're also going to have another 600 meter range that'll be dedicated for service rifle competitions.
Cool.
Right? We're talking well over 8 action ranges. We'll have a dedicated cowboy action range. We'll have training ranges for people that are not familiar with firearms so they can get comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have multiple, trap and skeet ranges, an Olympic skeet range. We're going to have even an Olympic biathlon range and course.
Nice.
Lots of smaller, 200 meter, 100 meter, 300 meter style ranges. Lots of pistol ranges as well. There'll be multiple 5-stand ranges. There'll be a full sporting clays course.
Nice.
There'll be ranges.
One of the other things, sorry, I mean, I'm going to jump in really quick on one thing that fascinated me was Kent's insistence that we're going to have a lot of full-time ROs, and for whatever comes up in regulation or whatever, we're going to be covered in terms of how many ROs are there to help new shooters and just be there to make sure that the range is going to be open as long as anyone wants to use it,
right.
You know.
Yeah, that's sort of a that's sort of a concept here in the rural parts of the country. We don't really get is the fact that you have to have an RO at the range whenever somebody's shooting. Here in New Brunswick, if I want to go to the range and nobody else is there when I show up, I just go ahead and shoot. I don't need supervision to shoot my guns. But I understand that that's something different in Ontario, where I think it's a CFO mandate, is it not? Where they say if somebody's shooting, somebody's an RO. And by RO, I mean range officer. That person's in charge of the firing line.
Yeah, I believe it is Ontario directed. We're not exactly sure if you'll ever show up to the range and there'll be nobody there.
Right. Yeah, it's the thing, and that's the difference between there and here too, I guess.
But certainly, we're going to have a higher amount of instances of people not being fully familiar with, they haven't grown up with firearms.
Right.
So having staffed RO positions on site is going to have a bit more of an importance than perhaps another range elsewhere in the country.
Cool.
And of course, we are going to have an indoor component.
Right. Yeah. So indoor pistol shooting, I suppose.
Indoor pistol, indoor rifle. At least 100 meters. Probably adding another 300 meter indoor. We'll have indoor skeet, which is I believe a first in North America.
Oh, that'll be cool. You can't blame the wind for that miss now, can you? Somebody turn down the ceiling fans. I keep missing.
Straight 25s. That's it, man.
So if you want to shoot skeet in the winter, you don't want to be out in the snow, you can. Obviously, we didn't quite have the winter that you guys had out east.
Yeah, no.
I just have to point out here, Jason, who I'm sure is listening. I just want you to note, I'm not the only person who calls it skeet. Just...
Except that they're actually talking about skeet, Owen. They're not talking about
trap and
shooting clay. Oh, come
on. Let me make fun
clay.
Of that. Nah, it's fun too, of Jason.
See, and I'm making fun of you. You make fun of him, and I'll make fun of you. This goes all the way around.
You could say he fell into the trap of misnaming skeet. Oh, sorry.
That's funny.
All right. Sorry about that. Continue on.
Well, also, I have, it's one of the new things that is, coming into the shooting community, of course, is, the moving, the projected screens.
Right. Yep. So, the Cine range or whatever it is they're called.
Yeah. We're going to be well covered for that. We'll even have indoor action ranges.
Nice.
And of course, full service of amenities to go with it. Food court and all that stuff we'll be looking at.
Awesome. This sounds like it's going to be like the ultimate fun zone for somebody who's into guns.
Well, Canada's Wonderland for the shooting sports. Yeah.
Are you going to have retail outlet there as well? And sort of a side question, firearms rentals available for people who don't own their own?
Yes and yes.
Awesome. Very good. I like that.
Also gunsmithing. We want to have, really, when we say the word capacity, as unsexy as that sounds, we just want to have the capacity to be able to accommodate as many shooters who are interested. And if that means, we're going to be within driving radius that's accommodating, that's great. If that means, we're going to have the kind of ranges where you're going to be able to shoot at the distances you like when you like, we're going to accommodate that with capacity. And if there's going to be a retail thing, gunsmithing, amenities that goes beyond the ever-present vending machine, then we're going to create capacity because, like Kent said, this is about bringing firearms ownership in Ontario to the forefront. We had things called the Ontario Rifle Association. We still have things like that.
Yep.
And it's part of Ontario's heritage and culture, and we're embracing it. That's what Ken said. We're going back to something that we already had. Yep. And it is mainstream. And you know what? The only thing is that it's been languishing for lack of attention, lack of capacity. We're addressing that, and we're taking it back.
Awesome.
We're bringing it back.
I like that. Okay, well, guys, why don't we wrap this up by you telling our listeners where they can go to help out with this?
Well, the best way to get there is would be the web. We're on GoFundMe. It's the only crowdfunding site that actually allowed us. We got turned down by more than one, including Kickstarter, of course.
Interesting.
Anything to do with firearms, right?
Yeah.
It's on GoFundMe. .com/RAIN Initiative. Rain as in,
R-E-I-G.
Yeah, like a king reigns.
Like a king reign.
Over the dominion.
Be fit for a king. There you go.
Right.
Or alternatively, you can go to tinyurl.com/KingSports.
King Sports. Okay,
that's
I'll put
a little bit easier to type in. And of course, on Canadian Gun Nuts, we're maintaining a thread in the general discussion forum If people, you know, like to ask more questions or be a bit more involved. We can't discuss, obviously, everything, at this point. And if people would like to, help out in a more substantial way than just a mere, or not, I mean, dismissive, but in a very substantial way, they can message us there and get a hold of us.
Awesome. I will make sure.
A fancy YouTube video, which you can post for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
There you go.
You got the YouTube video done yet?
Oh, yeah.
It is done, and the outtakes are locked up and secured for future funding efforts. Right? You might sell those.
Excellent. Okay, well, I'll make sure that I post links in on our website so that people can just go there and click. If they're already listening and already going to the website, they can just go there and click them. And otherwise, like you said, tiny URL, King Sports.
King Sports, yeah.
Yep. And,
I mean, history is made by those who show up. So, I mean, we're right. Showing up. We're hoping a bunch of people show up with us, and we're going to make some history here. It's going to be nice.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
We wish you all the best in your endeavor, and let us know if we can help out at all, and we'll be there to help you guys. Sounds like a really good project.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much.
All right. Well, thanks again to Kent and Daniel for stopping by and talking about their awesome initiative there. So I encourage everybody to head over to that crowdfunding and help out if you can, because it's going to be a really cool project if they get that all rolled up and underway. So,
and by stopping by, we don't mean literally stopping by, because they weren't here. It was an electronic stopping by.
All right, then Captain Obvious again to the rescue.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Well, why don't you continue to not help yourself and bring us into the Warriors Ethos project here. What do you got for us this week?
Right. It's time to help someone else other than ourselves.
That's right.
I don't actually have anything planned.
Oh, good. Perfect.
But the first listener feedback was rather apropos, and so I thought we could launch right in.
What? Yeah. Appropriate. Apropos? Is really that?
That's a word.
Okay. Flipperosity.
And 10X can back me up on that.
I bet you he could.
Maybe I mispronounced it.
But, no, I think I've heard people use that word before. I've just never heard you say that before.
No, I try to dumb down my talk a little bit around you. Just
thank you.
Make you more feel at home. And,
make and, you more feel better.
Yes, I make you more feel better, eh? And, not totally a blast.
So. Right. Okay. So you were saying this first feedback is sort of up your alley here about Warriors Ethos. So do you want me to read it and you'll respond to it, or did you want to read it?
Okay, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Okay, so it's from Dalton, and he says, "Hello again. I'm writing in this time to see if you guys could cover some gardening. This may be this may be more relative to the Warriors Ethos, but I figured I'd send it here. I've never done any gardening before, and I just purchased my first home over the winter. I heard the Armed Squirrels a while back talk a bit about gardening, but it left me wanting for more information. It's springtime, or something like that, and so I figured it's the perfect time. I'd love some information for the first-time gardener on how to get started. I'm hoping to grow some vegetables and maybe some herbs." Herbs, right? It's definitely herbs.
Yes, you can grow a herb. You have to have just the right DNA. But
gotcha. Okay, so some herbs this year for both preparedness purposes and to save a bit of money on the grocery bill. Anyway, hope you can help me out with this. Thanks, Dalton. So, Owen, I can hear you just scratching at the door here. Talk gardening, man, and get it out of your system so we can move back on to gun stuff.
Well, it is that time of year here as well. Now, I don't know where Dalton is exactly in the country. So some parts are a little more spring-like than others.
Yeah, it's not very spring-like here yet.
The ground is still a little bit frozen. Yeah,
yeah,
it's starting to thaw, but I'm getting that itch to get in the dirt again. So, first time gardening. I could talk a long time on this.
Please don't.
I don't know how much land he has. There's so many other things here I'd like to know, but the starting point is start basic, start small, and start easy. So. Don't go too big too fast, because it can be a lot of work at first and kind of overwhelming. And while I would love to talk about permaculture and, growing with mulch and ground covers and layering your plants and all that kind of stuff, start really simple. And the simplest way to start is rent a rototiller, or if you want to prepare your ground this year and do something next year, you could do that as well, and that gives you much better ground, because you had a chance to, we suppress the weeds and kind of get rid of the grass and the sod that's going to be very present. I know the first year I plowed up that area. Oh man, it was just saw bits of sod and divots of grass and everything. We just forever we're digging that out. So small. So don't bite off more than you can chew. Again, depending on your property and how much, you know, ground you have, you might want to start with something that's 20 by 20 just to start
feet?
Out.
Feet?
Yes.
Not meters.
Well, no, you know, you could, no, yeah, I'd probably do feet. Yeah.
Okay.
20 by 20 feet. That's
and
a good.
What sort of vegetables should he start out with? What's he going to have really good success with sort of the first time around?
Yeah, that's what I was going to go into next. You want easy vegetables. Don't start with really hard to stuff. And your ground, you got to remember, unless there was a garden there before, isn't going to be very good ground. So you're going to have to put the investment into adding, you know, manure and compost. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be potentially rocky. Root vegetables aren't going to do as good. Plant a lot of things like beans and peas. Beans and peas are legumes. So they're nitrogen fixers, which means they produce nitrogen and put it into the ground. Essentially, that's the easiest way to explain.
We don't need the scientific principles
behind
that.
And nitrogen is one of the main components of any fertilizer you would buy. It's also a main component in manure. It's a thing that makes stuff green in the soil. So you want to start with, you know, a lot of legumes. You can do what else would be really good? See, anything like carrots are going to struggle because you just don't have the depth of soil yet. They like nice, soft, loamy soil. But at first, it's going to be kind of shallowest on the harder side until you kind of get it developed.
Now, I know onions are more of a root, but would that be something that might work a little bit better because they don't go so deep as carrots or potatoes or whatnot?
Yep, those sorts of things are good.
What about like cucumbers? Is that a harder vegetable to grow?
Cucumbers and squash are, depending on where you are, prone to pests.
Oh, okay.
But I will tell you that the very first time you plant them, you're not going to have a lot of pests around because the garden is brand new. So you could have a lot of success that first year. The other nice thing about those, especially the squash, because they have these great big leaves that once they get spread out and they really spread, they cover all the ground, you know, with their leaves. And so what happens is that right in and of itself is weed suppression.
Yeah, that's right. The sun's not getting to the soil, so it's not heating up the little seeds that are in there and causing germination of all the weeds.
Exactly. So they're really good. And I like, if I do break ground on a new patch, they're one of the things that I like to put in that new patch for the very first time to help with that, get rid of the weeds that might come up that first year.
What about something like tomatoes?
Tomatoes can be good.
I disagree. I don't like tomatoes.
Yeah,
but
you don't like tomatoes.
As a vegetable to grow in a garden, I just know that, like, I'm just trying to think of all the gardens that I've sort of seen, and, you know, the staples that typically are there are tomatoes, carrots, onions, and green beans, really, is what most people tend to grow.
Really, when it comes down to it, grow what you like and grow what you're going
to
eat.
Yeah, so it doesn't make any sense for me to grow tomatoes because I'm like, okay, so I got a great big batch of tomatoes. I'm just going to huck them at the trucks as they go by or something. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, grow what you want to eat. I'm not going to get into details.
So like Big Macs. Can I grow Big Macs?
You can try. I'm not going to get into the details of like how deep to plant seeds if you're all, you know, all that kind of stuff. Read the package. It tells you on the package how to plant, you know, go with it that way. If you want more detail, send me an email or something and, you know, we can discuss that or look me up on Facebook or something. Grow what you want to eat. Things like you say, beans, you can't seem to kill beans. We grow the same number of beans every year, and we seem to have more beans every year. It's uncanny. The thicker you plant them, the better they grow, it seems.
Can them, right?
We freeze beans. We freeze.
I was going to say, because you just said it's uncanny, but then I was like, but you can them. Sorry. I can't help myself. I'm going to mute my mic now so I don't...
Another. Finally, that took long enough.
Shush you.
The other thing in regards to peas is a potted pea. You have to plant a lot of it to get any amount, but if you like an edible pod pea, then you'll get a lot more food value for your square footage. So just do the research on what you want to grow, because there's so many different varieties. If you plan on storing it, make sure you buy a storage vegetable. If you want to eat it just fresh, then just, you know, you can get early varieties that may be better for that. You really have to do the research and it'll say right on the packages when you go to buy your seeds. Some stuff just is better for storing. So kind of got to be picky about that. We could go into a lot of other things as far as storage, but really just if you have farmers in the area or anybody you can get manure from, that's great to put on. Make sure it's well composted before you put it on. Otherwise, you can actually burn the seeds. It's too, the manure will be too hot. The nitrogen, it will actually burn the seeds. Starting a compost pile is a great idea, and producing your own compost. And then just go from there and see what you had success with, see what worked, see what didn't work. And the next year, till up another little patch, and the next year, till up another little patch, and just keep going that way. And you're definitely right that it's going to save more than a bit of money on the grocery bill. Without doing a whole lot of numbers, we would not be able to live the way we live if we didn't have a garden. You know, we have a third the cost of grocery bills to a normal person, maybe even less, because we grow all of our vegetables, for the year out of our garden. And, that's a family, just to give you an idea in size, cause I don't know your family. So maybe you've got 14 kids, you've got to cut a feed, but, that's a family of five, on 2 30 by 30 gardens, roughly. So we had kind of two patches. So we got about 30 by 60 feet. And, yeah, cool. So I don't know what else we could add into that, but definitely there's going to be some gardening stuff, I'm sure, over the next bit on my blog. Just go to warriorsethos.wordpress.com, and of course you can find me on Facebook, Warriors Ethos Project on there, and we can talk some more about it, or you can send me an email, whatever, because I love to talk about that stuff.
As we can tell.
Yes. Tripping over my words, trying to get everything out that I wanted to say or could say.
No, you did good. You did really good. I even learned some stuff there, so it's fantastic.
All right. So next we have an audio submission from Sharp 97.
Hi, Slamfire Radio. It's been a while. This is Sharp 97. Just wanted to give you guys a quick update. I have taken my RPAL course. I've passed with 100 on both. I have taken two friends shooting, and I've finally gotten Mrs. Sharp 97 to go shooting. She was very apprehensive, but now she really enjoys it and hopes to go again.
I'm really good.
And she's really good. I hope everything's going well. Oh, and Matthew, I was wondering what you do with your 22 brass. Do you just throw it out? How do you recycle it? What do you do? Hope all's well. Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Fantastic, and congratulations on passing your PAL there, and for taking your wife out shooting. That's fantastic too. What do I do with my 22 brass? Well, I bring it home, put it in a cereal bowl, and eat it with milk. it's just delicious. It's a little crunchy. It's hard to get down, but
it's part of a balanced breakfast.
Party, get your brass intake. Vitamin B. I generally, if I'm at the range, I sweep it up and throw it in the garbage. We don't have a recycling system in place for 22 brass. All of the reloadable casings go into a separate container where the people who reload scavenge through that and take what they want. If the person who shot it just leaves it, so it's there for anybody else to take. But 22 brass, we just, like I said, sweep it up, throw it in the garbage. We don't have a recycling system for that. I don't know, maybe we should. Maybe it's worth something. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. But, what I do is if I pick it up, which is not totally common.
No.
But just because we have an outdoor range, so it kind of just...
Yeah, if I'm out shooting ahead of the firing line, which we're allowed to do here at my range, just before anybody goes crazy, why are you shooting in front of the firing range? Yeah, when you're there by yourself, you can, as long as you're shooting at the backstop, you can pretty much shoot wherever you like. But yeah, if I'm out in the grass, I'm not going to pick up my brass. I mean, you can't find it. It's gone. But if I'm in the covered shooting point, it's concrete there. Yeah, I just sweep it up and throw it in the garbage.
Anything I do pick up, or does get picked up, I have a bucket at home and I just throw it in the bucket.
Yeah.
And it's because it's brass, and brass is worth something.
So can you take that to like a recycling place and they'll pay you for it, like by the pound or something?
Absolutely.
I wonder how much you'd get for a bucket of 22 brass.
Oh, the last, maybe you might even get about, I think it's down right now, right, the price of brass, but I've seen it as high as, you know, $2, $1.80 to $2 a pound.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a lot, but by a 5-gallon pail of brass.
Yeah.
Surprise you how much that weighs.
Yeah. Yeah, it would.
You know, over time. And I do that. I had just everything. If I have a rifle brass that's cracked, you know, or good, or a piece of brass that I ruined while I was reloading, I just throw it in there.
Cool. Well, good to know. Maybe I'll start collecting it then. I just never considered that before.
Mm.
Awesome possum.
Okay, and then its next email comes from Uncle B. Congrats to Owen and Matthew and Owen.
I don't think it really mattered. You could have said it the other way.
Well, just in case, you know, maybe he's your uncle. You know, he's talking to you first. I don't know.
I think this is Uncle Biscuit.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know.
Uncle B, the only other uncle I know that writes in is Uncle Biscuit, so I'm pretty sure it's Uncle Biscuit.
All right. Congrats to Matthew and Owen on buying a plane. So what did you buy? Now when Trevor starts talking or going on about archery, you can talk about aviation.
Maybe Trevor can shoot his bow and arrow out of the airplane.
There you go.
That'd be cool. we bought a Chinook Plus 2. So if you Google that, you'll see what it looks like. Or you can go to either of our YouTube channels and see a couple videos of it. So, or our Facebook pages or wherever you like. Yeah, that's what we bought. It's pretty neat. We're having lots of fun still learning how to fly it.
Yes, it's different.
It's not so different for Owen because he's never really flown before. So, but it's different than being on the ground, right?
It is different. I'm going to have to say, and the aviators everywhere will want to string me up. It's different than flying other planes that I've flown in a simulator.
Right.
So just because of the attitude of how the plane flies, because it's very flat.
Yes, it does fly very flat, even though it doesn't seem like when you're coming in for approach, it looks like you're screaming at the ground. It doesn't really have a traditional panel like it does, but it's so low in your field of view. You can see right down over the nose of the plane. So you may only be in a 10-degree descent, but it looks like you're just diving at the ground because you can see right straight down almost. It's pretty unnatural.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to spill right out over the...
But looking at the video afterwards, it does come in actually quite flat. But yeah, no, it's a cool little plane, and it's definitely it's a stick and rudder kind of plane. So I'm really looking forward to actually learning how to fly, as opposed to how to pilot an aircraft. And I think there's a difference there. Modern training airplanes, I think, are just way too easy to fly.
Right.
I've been putting some hours in the Cessna 150, getting my private pilot's license recurrent, and I was just after a couple of hours, not even hours, a couple of flights in the Chinook and then going into the Cessna, it was just so stable and so easy. There was no rudder inputs required for turns. Everything's coordinated just with the ailerons. Like, it was just such an easy plane to fly. And then I came back and flew in the Chinook, and it was like, oh my goodness, my feet are doing something now. And they have to do something or else the plane's skidding and slipping. And it's like almost flying like a World War II. Sorry, a World War I, like a Sopwith Camel or a Newport or a Fokker DR1 or something. Like, nothing's really coordinated. There's adverse yaw all over the place. It's so light, and you have to stay on top of everything, and it is so much fun. Our flying sucks right now because it's quote-unquote so much fun, but it is going to be a lot of fun to master this plane and to really, really have some actual flying skills. So... anyway, thanks for the congrats. We're very excited about it, as you can probably tell by me not shutting up about it. We should move on to guns before we get lynch mobbed.
Lynch mobbed.
All right, is okay. I'll just hop on my plane and fly away. So, did I mention I bought a plane?
yeah. So, why don't you read this next one while you're on a roll?
While I'm calming down here? Okay. From Byron. He says, hello, Slamfire hosts and guest. So... we had a guest. They've left, but I'm sure they appreciate your hello there, Byron. This summer, I will be traveling from Saskatchewan on a tour through the states. When I get to Oklahoma, some friends of mine who live there have offered to take me shooting. I'm not bringing any firearms with me on my trip, so I don't need specifics on the ATF form you mentioned before, but I would really like to know what I can or can't do with firearms as a Canadian in the States. I'd also like to know what I can buy as far as gun parts and bring them back with me. I've heard that I can get into trouble for bringing certain things or ammunition across the border back into Canada. Hopefully you can give me a general understanding or just tell me I should get everything online or locally instead. I eagerly await your advice. I also want to take a moment to thank you for making the show. I'm always going on road trips for work, so I listen to you every week. I've listened to many of your friends' podcasts on your recommendation, but you should know that yours is the best. Best regards from your longtime listener, Byron from Regina. Well, thank you, Byron. That's very nice to hear that. We're happy to entertain you as best we can. I want to congratulate you on the proper use of an apostrophe. I know I've been rough on listeners in the past I'm not going to point out anytime somebody screws up anymore. I've been chastised myself. I know to be quiet, but when somebody goes above and beyond with the appropriate use of an apostrophe, I really think that it's important to point that out. So good job. Email already from Trevor, detailing what answers to your questions here. But for the listeners who didn't get that email, because Trevor didn't mass email everybody, which they're probably thankful for, what you can do in the States with guns will vary from state to state. And so it's important that you look into the laws of that state and make sure that you do stay on the proper side of the law. Some states will allow you to go as far as open carrying a firearm. Some states, I think a couple of them, will actually let you conceal carry a firearm as long as you're a law-abiding person. But I could be wrong on that. I do know you can open carry, but I'm not sure about the concealed carry, but I think so. Anyway, regardless, you need to ask the questions that you need to ask when you get to Oklahoma or whatever state you're going to be in and make sure that you stay on the right side. Most of the time, I'm going to say that you're probably going to be able to handle and shoot any firearm at a range or on private property, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know, remember, we don't offer any legal advice here. This is just what I think you probably should be able to do. Do not quote me on anything here. But, you know, anything reasonable like that, you know, a buddy's got a 10/22 or an AR or a Glock or whatever, and you're in his backyard and he's allowed to shoot there, you're allowed to shoot there too, as far as I understand it. As for what you can bring back from the States,
it's not really an issue bringing it back.
On the Canadian side. It's getting it out. It's not bringing it into Canada. It's getting it out of the States.
Canada does not care. Well, as long as it's legal in Canada, they don't care.
That's right. If
you
it's legal
bring
in Canada.
5,000 rounds of ammunition back into Canada legally.
Right.
And all you got to do is pay your tax when you come in.
But the Americans care.
The Americans care that you're in possession of it while you're there.
Basically, what you can do is anything you bring in, you can bring back out. So if you were to bring ammunition, if you bring 5,000 rounds into the States, you can bring 5,000 rounds back out of the States. It's something like that. Don't quote
me. As long as you have the proper forms.
Right. So
you still would have to have your 6 NIA and all that stuff.
Yeah. As I understand it, you're not bringing anything into the States. You just want to bring stuff out. You're probably not going to bring... you know what? Your best bet is to just buy whatever you're going to buy on Brownells, because they've got exporting things to Canada down to a science. They take care of all the ATF stuff. You don't have to worry about crossing the border with firearms parts and freaking out the border guards. Just, you know, you're probably best just ordering it online once you get back home.
Yeah, it really comes down to actual gun parts or accessories. Accessories are fine. You want to buy a sling while you're in the States, or you want to buy a Magpul AFG while you're in the States. You know, those kinds of things. They're not ITAR controlled,
right.
So they're fine. But if you're buying an actual gun part, you're buying a bolt for an AR.
But that being said, a scope is an ITAR controlled. So even though that's not a gun part, it's a gun accessory. That is one thing
scopes.
Some scopes are, yeah.
Not all scopes. So that's where you really have to do the research.
It gets complicated.
If you're going down and you have a shopping list, then you can, before you go down, do the research and say, oh, well, I will be able to buy this. I will not be able to buy this other thing.
Yep.
You know, you can do the research. All the data is available, even online. And you can do that research and determine what you're going to be able to get and what you're not going to be able to get
Yep.
down there. Yep.
So anyway, I hope you have a good trip. Sounds like it's going to be fun. Nice tour through the states down to Oklahoma from Saskatchewan. That'll be a nice road trip for you. So
hot.
Enjoy yourself there and shoot lots of guns while you're down there. Try to get some shooting in on some guns you can't shoot up here in Canada. You know, FALs, AK-47s, Uzis, you know, that sort of thing. The fun stuff. That
way
you can. And you should definitely try to, if you can legally, you should definitely try to open carry somewhere. Just so you can write back in and say, hey, Trevor, I open carried in Oklahoma.
That's right.
I don't know if you can or not in Oklahoma. Don't do it if you're not allowed. I'm just saying. But if you can, you totally should.
Or open carry in two states. And then you can one-up Trevor and say, I carried in two, open carried in Oklahoma and Utah.
Yep. That would be cool.
All right. Let's move on. I'll read this one because it's short.
All right.
Oh, this is a joke.
It is a joke.
From George. Maybe it's not a joke. I don't know. From George. What do you call a mad German? Nobody?
I don't know. I don't know. Yes. Owen, what do you call a mad German?
A sauerkraut.
Ba-dum-ps. I think that's in reference to Trevor sticking his entire leg in his mouth last week. Basically just kept chewing it down.
He's not on this week?
Yeah. He's not here. Which,
he's on time out.
Oh, yes. That is funny. Thank you, George. A sauerkraut. I wonder if... Never mind. I'm not going to go down that road.
Nope.
Thank you, George. Thank you for writing in.
I'm going to move on here real quick.
Yes, here we go.
To save you from...
putting my foot in my mouth.
Exactly.
Just give me time and I'll do it.
This next one comes from Tyler. I would like an opinion on reloading dies. I've got a Lee single stage press and I'm going to get dies for 9mm. Next year I might get a Dillon 650. So I'm torn on the die selection. Do I get a set of Dillon dies or a Lee 4-piece set? I have used the Lee for rifle and much prefer my RCBS. Okay, sorry for being boring, but I've read that if I get Dillon, I need an expanding die also and don't have 150 just for dies. Okay, any advice, guys? You guys rock. Thanks for doing what you do. Tyler.
Well, Tyler, we really wish Trevor was on this week now because he's the guy to answer this question. I have no idea.
My understanding is, I'm pretty sure that the dies I use are just Lee dies. I could be wrong on that, but I don't think you'd need a set of Dillon dies.
I think, and I'm with you on this, I think that the dies themselves are sort of standard thread, standard size. They'll fit into any press. I think.
Oh, absolutely. I guarantee it. Well, I shouldn't guarantee it.
Well,
but
yeah. See, that's why I say I think. Because that way, when somebody goes and spends $150 on dies and they don't fit, they blame you, not me.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Sure they do. Maybe Trevor will answer this for us next week, or maybe, I don't know. Yeah. But that's a good question.
Throw this back in there, or he can email Tyler.
Yeah, we'll do something. We'll leave it in here, and then next week we'll just read it again, and Trevor will answer it, and then we'll move on.
Because I've got some experience on the 650, but it's not my press. It's a friend's press, and so it comes and...
It's a French press?
No, it's a friend's press.
Oh, friend's
press.
He's
not French.
No, he's not. Okay.
Shout out to Random New Brunswick Dave.
There you go.
So, yeah, we load 9mm on it as well, but I don't know what he has in it for dies. I'm pretty sure he has Lee dies in it, but I don't know that for sure. So,
cool. All right. Well, like I said, Tyler, sorry. We can't answer yet, but next week we'll do our best to get you a proper answer. Yep.
All right. Matt, you want to grab the next one?
Yes, from Anonymous. Anonymous.
Anonymous?
Anonymous.
This is an anonymous listener.
Anonymous listener. Or an anonymer. I just made that up. I like it. It's now a word. From an anonymer. The Common Sense Firearm Act will do away with the CFSC and CRFSC, that's Canadian Firearm Safety Course and Canadian Restricted Firearm Safety Course, test challenges and force everyone to do the full courses. This change can come into effect immediately when the legislation is enacted. Given the shortage of instructors in some regions, this is going to make the months-long wait for a seat in the course even longer. Why aren't people contacting their MPs and Minister Blaney about this provision, which is going to serve as a financial and time impediment to many people getting a PAL in the future? If the Liberals were passing this, we would all be screaming that this provision virtually makes it illegal to teach your kids, spouse, friends, safe gun handling yourself, from an anonymous listener. That's a good point. Why aren't we more upset about this? Yeah. I think we should be, because that is the one part of this act. Well, there's probably more than that, but this is the one part that I understand about it that I do not like. If there is a test that you need to pass to get your firearms license, if you can pass that test without taking the course, does that not demonstrate that you have the skills and knowledge required to pass the course? Why would they take away the challenge option? Why would you take somebody who has years of firearms experience and is now just getting his license because he moved into Canada from another country? Why are they forcing him to take this course if he can pass it without having to take the course? This is ridiculous. And I think a lot of us should be a lot more upset about this. I know I am. And we should be emailing our MPs and Minister Blaney. So listeners, do that. If you're upset about that, which you should be, get active.
Letters, email, call.
Absolutely. Thank you, anonymous listener, or anonymer, if you will. Owen, I guess you got this next one then.
This next one comes from 10X. Greetings, Maverick, Goose, and Trevor. I'm going to say that's a negative on the flyby and the purple t-shirt, Ghost Rider. Some Top Gun references there for people who have watched it.
And Trevor.
And Trevor. Ghost Rider. Oh, seriously, McClatchy, do you realize how many calls the New Brunswick RCMP would receive about Barney the Dinosaur running loose at the Balmoral Gun Range if I am attired in a purple t-shirt? I'll be having less of such shenanigans. Thank you very much. looking forward to the cherry shoot, your humble correspondent, 10X.
Yes, that was in reference to me suggesting he wanted a purple t-shirt, which he doesn't. He wants a tan t-shirt, but I'm going to get him a purple one.
Well, it is 10X.
It is 10X, after all. Ah, ba-dum-ps. That's hilarious.
That show.
All right, thank you, 10X, and I will make sure you get a tan t-shirt instead of a purple one, probably. All right, this last email comes to us from Spencer. Just a quick firearms update. The Canic, also known as the Walther P99 clone, passed 600 rounds without any kind of failure, so it gets the Streamlight TLR1 and becomes the new bedside gun. That gun is still the best $300 I ever spent on a firearm, even if it is a little weird. I also got to take the FNC9C out a few times, and it shoots like a champ. Easily as accurate as a bigger model, and with the smaller 12-round magazines, it has the best two-finger grip I've come across. FN really did their homework on this one. I need a few hundred more rounds on it, but I'm pretty sure this is the new carry gun, replacing the XDs. Also, I thought you guys might appreciate this handy graphic. Hope all is well, from Spencer. And Trevor actually posted that on the Facebook page, so go check that out. It's, are you even an operator? And basically the answer is no, you are not. it's a pretty funny graphic. It's one of those flowchart things. I have an AR-15, so I'm an operator. And then it goes through a bunch of lines and stuff. And they all end up with no, you're not. So it's pretty hilarious. You should go check it out. Thanks for writing in. If you want to send an email to the show, and you definitely should because we love getting email, send them to slamfireradio@gmail.com. We'll enjoy reading them on the air for you. And like we had tonight, if you want to, send us an email anonymously, you certainly can. Just sign it anonymous, and we will call you an anonymer. And it'll be good.
Oh, man, that's too funny. And you would send that to slamfireradio@gmail.com.
Yep.
All right. iTunes reviews.
Here's the thing. I know last week I promised to have checked it, but the computer that I use to check iTunes won't start.
Okay.
I think the power supply blew up on it. I'm not sure. So I've got to get that looked at. I just don't have iTunes on this computer that I record on. So I guess I could download and put it on, but I don't want to, so I'm not going to. So I'll get that computer fixed eventually. And we'll read more iTunes reviews. So that'll be that. But if you want to leave us an iTunes review, we love them. So you just head on over to iTunes and just go to Slamfire Radio and do your thing. It'll be cool. We would appreciate it.
Yes. Shoutouts.
To Chris Anderson for reasons and more reasons. Chris is awesome, basically. And if you have enjoyed the flying videos that have been posted recently, you're going to enjoy them a heck of a lot more very soon. So that is all for now. But yes, thank you, Chris. You are awesome.
Yes. All right. Check out the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcasts.com. It has all kinds of great pro-gun shows. Join any or all of our National Firearms Associations. It's important to support them. Each and every year, gun rights are chipped away at or attempted to be chipped away at. So support the people that support you in lobbying the government for less gun control. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook. 1,184 likes and counting. And I guess that's it.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back next week, I guess. With Hope Trevor, so. Probably.
Oh. Well. Yes, Trevor will be back next week. I'm in with double the fun because we'll have 2 weeks.
That's it. Yep. Yes.
All right. So long for now. Everyone take care.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.